Hi, I'm Bella Gandhi, founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host of this beautiful podcast. We're here to bring more love into your life, regardless of if you're single, if you're married, if you're thinking about becoming single, if you're thinking about becoming married or finding the lid to your pot. And we're going to bring more life into that love that you have or you want. You might have seen me on Good Morning America or Steve Harvey or the Today Show or 100 other places, but I'm so happy that you are here with us because we're going to make your life and your love better. Smart daters, welcome back. I'm so excited to talk to you today and to introduce my incredible guest, Ms. Gabrielle Hartley. Gabrielle is, first of all, just a freaking amazing human being. She's a friend, but professionally, she's a nationally recognized online mediator. She's a divorce attorney. She's the co-chair of the American Bar Association Mediation Committee. She's a TEDx speaker. And most importantly, she's the author of the book and the topic that we're going to talk about today called, Gabrielle, tell us the title of your book,
The Secret to Getting Along and Why It's Easier Than You Think.
Well, what an intro for you. Gabrielle, let's talk about the secrets to getting along. And why is it easier than you think? Because sometimes I'm not sure it's that easy to get along. So
I didn't say it was easy. I didn't say it was easy. I said it's easier than you think, right? So it's like not impossible. You can do, we can all do it better, right? So I'm not talking about making every relationship like perfect. I am talking about like perfect. Did you like my Valley Girl there? I'm talking about making your relationships that are dysfunctional more functional, your relationships that are already functional even better.
Okay. So I love that. Let's talk about getting dysfunctional to functional. How do we do that? Like, tell us maybe for context, give us a little bit about how did you start doing this work? How did you decide to write this book?
Okay, well, I'll give you the short version. So when I grew up, my parents divorced when I was 9 and my brother was 6. And they did it, even though it was the early 80s, they did it in a very mindful way. They went to mediators and they brought us all in and they really modeled getting along even when they disagreed, right? And then I went to law school and I took family law pass fail. I was like, I am never going to be a divorce lawyer. This is like the least interesting topic and I am done with it. But as luck would have it, then I wound up working for a judge in divorce court in New York City, where I helped to resolve nearly 1,000 high conflict, crazy cases. And I found, number one, that I absolutely loved it. I was really good at it. I didn't plan to do it. It just worked out that way. And I saw how much people fought about nonsense and how much the system really stirred up more conflict than there even was to begin with. So when I left working for the judge, I started my law and mediation firm. And that's when I wrote my first book, Better Apart, The Radically Positive Way to Separate. So anyway, I write Better Apart. And then I start to think about, and you know, living in the world, how could you not think about how much conflict there is everywhere, every day, wherever we turn. And I decided to write a book called The Secret to Getting Along and Why It's Easier Than You Think for all of us to use in our lives at home, at work, dating, with your neighbors, in our lives. Because the same skills that you need to get through and move beyond a divorce, any kind of high conflict or even mid to high conflict situation can really benefit from.
Okay, well, tell us. I mean, I'm sure, dear listener, you, like all of us, like Gabrielle, like me, we have relationships that are good and functional and the people we love. And then we have the people that might cause us more friction in our lives where we're like, oh, we see their name come through on our cell phones. We're like, oh God, do I have to pick this up? What's it going to be? That person that gives you butterflies in your stomach, because butterflies are anxiety.
I was going to say, not in a good way. Butterflies, not a good way. And those people, you know, sometimes, hopefully not people you're dating, but sometimes we are related to people who make us anxious, but we don't want to cut ties with. You might have a very difficult parent or sibling that you don't want to cut out of your life. So you have to figure out how to make stronger boundaries around yourself so that you're protected, so that you have almost like, I think of it as like that myelin sheath, or for anybody here who might have studied bio, you know, like a protective coating so that you can stay safe emotionally and not get impacted when that person who you have strong affection for comes at you and causes those butterflies to escalate and make you feel actually sick inside and for you to become destabilized because of their destabilizing actions or behaviors or what they say and do.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Give us the formula. I'm sure everybody's listening with bated breath right now. How do we deal with that difficult coworker, boss, sibling, neighbor, cousin, parent, child that is basically putting a knot in our stomach and we just are having problems getting along? What can we do?
Okay, so, and I know Bella, you saw my TED talk, and if anyone hasn't listened to it, I have a very basic model that is called the Yes Method. And there are three steps to it. It is owning your role. Now, your role may be very small, but your role is very likely a small destructive behavioral tendency or habit that you might have. You might catastrophize, you might minimize, you might steamroll. I mean, there's a whole suite of things we all do that make things worse, right?
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, we've got to get to the E, which is what's the emotional story? What do we want or need here? Not the position, what's the behavior that we want to stop, but what do we actually need at our core? And I'm going to circle back to that difficult person. And then number three is S, which is for shelving or pausing heated conversations. Okay, so let's take, those three things, the Y, the E, and the S, you don't necessarily do them in this particular order. That's just a nice acronym to remember.
Got it.
We resolve our conflicts by understanding what we're fighting about. So in terms of, let's say you have a difficult father, let's just say, and you love your dad and you want to stay close to your dad, but he's a nut. And when he calls you, you're totally dysregulated. You can't concentrate on whatever you're supposed to do. And so, you know, what you might want is, you might want to say when you pick up the phone, oh my gosh, dad, stop calling me. You're interfering with you. Like how I'm holding the phone, like it's the 80s.
I do.
You're interfering with my day. You might just want to say like, stop calling. You might have this instinct to just, you know, yell back at him or cut him out or whatever it is. But you need to take that pause, shelve that conversation, take that break and ask yourself, why do you want that? Why? And what you're really looking for is two things. You want to feel peaceful, right? That's one thing that you want. And another thing you want is to maintain a relationship, right? But you know you can't have the relationship that you imagined having, right?
Because he's a nut.
Because he's a nut. And so all you can do is control your behavior, which is back to the why, right? So what are you going to do? Well, during the workday, maybe you're going to, if he starts calling you at 8 a.m, you might say, I will talk to you after work. I love you, but I can't talk until after work. And then you're going to go to your phone and maybe block his calls until after work. I'm not suggesting you do that if there's some emergency medical thing that you have to give him access to. But other than that, block his calls. So you are creating that shelving mechanism, that pause, so that you can de-escalate. And then at the end of the day, you can have a better thought out plan on how you're going to deal with that difficult person. In this case, your nutty dad.
Okay. So at that point, shelving that heated conversation, if your dad's blowing up your phone and you're at work, basically say with love, I can't talk to you now, right? I'll call you after work. Have a great day. Look forward to catching up. Send a nice message and then block if you need to. Now, when you call your dad after work, what happens? How do you put yourself in the right mindset at that point?
So first of all, you've had a whole day to cool down. You have a whole day to not think about your dad, do your work, have lunch with your friends, whatever it is that you're doing during your day. Maybe if you're so lucky, maybe take a run or do something exercise-wise before you unblock him. And then maybe you can control when the next contact is by you calling him. That will tend to de-escalate, right? Maybe he'll even not pick up your call now, right? But at least you've reached out and you can even say, hey, just trying you back. Hope you had a great day. Love you. And that's it. And then most of the time, somebody who's really high conflict, unless there's a particular thing happening, their attention after 8 hours is most likely going to shift to a new person. And you don't even have to worry about them continuing on you because they just might have been in that sort of mind space.
Got it. Yes, absolutely. And so at that point, to some extent, you've owned your own piece in it. It's like, okay, if I engage with you now, I'm not going to be the best version of myself. So I'm going to shelve it. And my emotional need, the E part, is I need to be peaceful and balanced during my day. So when I pick up the phone and call my dad, hopefully cooler heads have prevailed on both sides, and then we can stick to the issue at hand. But now, what if he's still incendiary and says, for example, you know, I'm really upset with you that you aren't coming to Thanksgiving this year and you're going to your husband's place.
And you can say, I hear that you're really upset with me and I do not like disappointing you. That's it. And then what's he going to say, Bella?
Well, does that mean you're going to come?
No, you're going to still do what you want to do, but you're just going to hear how he feels. And that I was going to say, it's really important to understand why the other person is acting the way they're acting. Of course, we can't be in other people's heads. It might feel like the reason your dad's acting like that is because he's trying to control you, but maybe he just wants a feeling of family, right?
100%.
And so you just say, I'm sorry to disappoint you. Maybe next week, and offer an alternative. Next week, why don't we go out for dinner? Why don't you come for dinner? Why don't I come to you for dinner next year? You know, whatever it is, or I'll come for whatever other holiday your family might celebrate.
And I think to your point, I'm going to talk about what a Smart Dating Academy tenet here. And we talk about assuming positive intent. And to your point, right, it is my dad is being controlling. And when we go down that branch, right, we can spin out of control.
Exactly.
There he goes again. And instead,
that's right.
If you own your reaction and say, hold on, Bella, if this was me, hold on. What's another story that could be happening? Maybe your dad values family and he misses you and he just wants to see you, and seeing you and your time makes him feel important. Then I automatically say, oh, you know what? I get that. He's older and he's isolated and there's not a lot of people around him that are making him feel important at this point because he's retired. So it automatically takes me down 10 notches,
exactly.
Brings my temperature back down so that I can call him from a place of empathy and understanding, even if he is being a controlling jackhole, which hopefully he's not, but I have now brought my own temperature down when he says, I really want you to come. It's like, Dad, I know that family is so important to you and it's so important to me and you're so important to me. I'm not going to be able to make it there on Christmas Day, but what I could do is we could be there Christmas Eve. How does that sound? Because you're important to me.
Exactly. And sometimes you're just going to have to disappoint the person, but you're going to give them an alternative, the good enough alternative, the Goldilocks alternative. And hopefully your father will be magnanimous, but if not, he may not show that he's satisfied enough because of pride or whatever other reasons, but by assuming the best and doing just, I couldn't have laid out the script better than you did. That's exactly what you need to do. And this very formula helps us in all of our relationships. You know, why didn't somebody call me back? They must not like me. Well, maybe, maybe not. Maybe they were really busy, right?
Exactly.
So we don't call them 50 times. We give them space and let them call you when it's time. And if maybe they don't call you soon enough for your liking, maybe that's not the person for you, right? So like reading signals is also an important point of getting along.
100%, and having empathy, right? So often, even in the dating world, somebody might cancel on us 2 hours before, oh, my son is really sick. And now if my self-esteem is feeling a little bruised and I've been ghosted for the last 3 weeks by 4 different guys, I might go, oh my God, you're lying. All these guys just lie. But instead, if you can, for that moment, take yourself out of yourself, own that's your past, but I'm not going to bring it into my present, and say, let me be empathic at this point. My gosh, that's awful. I so appreciate that you want to be there for your son. I would love to reschedule with you. Is there a date that works? Or let me know what works. Then you've been empathic, because it's 50-50 at that point. If you take out your frustration of the 4 previous people on this current person, who in a sense is an innocent bystander.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And so
blown it.
Right. And so you just, again, laid out the whole yes concept, your role. So when you're in a situation, let's just say it's a dating situation, and you're feeling some of your feels, notice what your behaviors are, right? Do you tend to catastrophize in your mind? All these guys are jerks, right? Do you minimize and do you take too much garbage? Nobody's a jerk. I'm not worth anything. You can cancel on me 5 times in a row. I don't care, right? Are you minimizing? You're catastrophizing. You know, are you doing, there's a whole set of things that we do that get in the way of our success in all of our relationships. Are you steamrolling somebody who really maybe doesn't want to go out? Well, maybe we can go here. What about this? And you keep throwing things at them and you're not giving them the space to come to you.
Exactly. Exactly. And I love that you're talking about these things, right? And these are things that we call, remember, your thoughts determine your destiny. And if you're bringing all of your stuff and what I think are called cognitive distortions, right? Like you're catastrophizing. Oh my God, if he canceled on me, I'm never going to find love. Okay. How did you get from 1 to 1,700,000 at that point?
That was pretty easy. It was pretty easy for them though.
It's pretty easy because we can spin ourselves down these holes. So the why in the yes method is controlling your stuff. And y'all, believe me, this is a lot harder than you think it is.
And right? We all have stuff. Like, don't judge yourself for your stuff. Like, I've got stuff. Bella's got stuff. Like, if you are a human, you have stuff. And it doesn't mean baggage. It just means behavioral tendencies that are destructive that we developed as children. Maybe our parents had them. Maybe we had trauma, maybe not like terrible trauma, but whatever things we went through as kids. And these were how we coped. So when you find yourself upset, ask yourself, am I doing some of these things? And then just take a pause. I'm not suggesting that you should suddenly become this total Zen Buddha if you're actually like a highly easily stimulated person, but just that you take that pause and you think about, what's another positive reason that this person might be acting this way or refraining from acting in a way that I wish he or she would be?
Yeah, absolutely. So I love this. So let's talk now about different scenarios. You know, let's say you walk into a date and your date clearly, unbeknownst to you, because you have not been at Smart Dating Academy and you don't know how to connect with someone versus disconnect, and you're not screening people the right way. So you're still going out on bad dates, right? So we have a whole formula to prevent you going on bad dates. But so let's say you sit down and this person is negative, or they start spewing some political stuff that you don't agree with, or they make some terrible comments. Like, is this a situation, Gabrielle, that you can turn around? Can you get along with this person?
So I think the first thing you have to decide is, what is your goal for this evening? I mean, my advice would be to not just leave and be rude. You always want to be polite. And I would just let their words that disagree with you dissolve around you like the air, because it's not worth it. This is not somebody, I have a whole section in the Secrets to Getting Along, hashtag relationship goals. Like, how important is this person to you? This person, you're never going to see again. You're never going to talk to again. But you don't know who they are. They might be the parent of your friend, your kid's friend. They might be somebody, I mean, your neighbor. You have no idea. It's always good to put your best foot forward and then to make a graceful exit when the time is right. You don't want to leave before the coffee comes if it feels like you're both going to have coffee. If he or she is talking about something that you find distasteful or unpleasant, try to gracefully turn the conversation to another topic. You might even say, let's talk about something else. So that way you're drawing a fine line. You're being clear. You're setting a boundary there. It's clear that there's no love connection, but you're there. If you made it, I'm not sure how you got all the way to dinner and you haven't established this, because I would say you should first have a quick date before, but I haven't gone to the Smart Dating Academy. So I don't know, Bella, what would you say about that?
Yeah. I mean, we have four steps before you get to an actual date, but you need to vet this person in a better way. I mean, the only people that are going on really disappointing dates, right, are the people that aren't following a step-by-step methodology. So you're right. Have a quick date with somebody. Maybe it's just a phone call. Maybe it's a video chat, but really kind of at least kick the tires before you even agree to spending an hour with somebody. Because I will tell you guys what, when you walk in and you're like, ooh, game over, an hour is an excruciatingly long
time.
It is.
I will tell you.
Count to 3,600. Okay. There are 60 minutes and 60 seconds in each minute. 60 times 60 is 3,600 seconds of your life are going to be spent with this person. So it pays to do some vetting before you agree even to that 1 hour.
100%. And so to get along, do your vetting. I think that's actually the best tip of all here. If you find yourself there and somehow you're in a situation, you know, and it's not the most pleasant, just be polite. That's really the best thing you can do. And then get out of there.
Yeah. And one of the things I love that you say, just taking a step back, is that conflict doesn't have to be bad. Let's talk about that.
Definitely not. Conflict is what makes us think, right? Conflict is why when we have teenagers, that's why God made teenagers, so that we can learn more about ourselves and the world, because they're the best at calling everything we say and everything we do into question. Conflict, when done skillfully, can actually move all of us in a better direction, because we're thinking more holistically, more globally. We're thinking of more perspectives, more points of view. We tend, especially when we live a sort of closed off life, we tend to be very narrow in how we perceive things. And I see this all the time in my divorce practice. People have very clear ideas about how things are supposed to go. And what's really interesting to me is that sometimes couples who really don't get along very well, sometimes they actually share the same narrow perspectives because they've lived in their little world together, right? But now that they're going to be separating, they're going to be bombarded with a whole new world of perspectives as they start to explore and meet new people.
Wow. And then what happens?
Exactly. So conflict, when done well, is really something that we should really all welcome into our lives and not run from it. But when conflict is not done well, I hate conflict. I'm a very conflict averse person, actually.
Me too.
But, you know, there's conflict everywhere. And I don't shy away from relationships with people that I disagree with. And that's why I'm very passionate about that. When I have a relationship, be it a friend, a colleague, someone, even a neighbor, I'm very comfortable having hard conversations. In fact, I find conversations that are hard to be the most compelling. Complicated people and complicated relationships, that's probably why I love doing divorce mediation so much.
Right.
They draw me in because there's nothing I want to do more than help people resolve them. And when I'm part of them, I love nothing more than finding that narrow meeting of the minds point, the point where we actually don't have to agree to disagree, or as my son sometimes says to me, disagree to disagree. We can actually agree. We can get to a point where we reach a consensus.
Oh man, that's so important. And you know, if you're dating somebody, okay, that's gone through divorce and they have a difficult ex, is there a way to get along better with the ex in this situation? Like, what do you do? Especially when people share kids, there's inevitable exposure you're going to have to somebody's ex.
Right. So it really depends. I hesitate to give a broad brushstroke response to that because yeah. sometimes the ex is so toxic, it's just best to steer clear.
Yeah.
Other times you can get along better with the ex than your new girlfriend or boyfriend did. And you might be able to help their relationship along because maybe you and the ex are both really organized and you can do scheduling better or something like that. I would say the most important thing is to not step on the other person's toes. Don't start going to the kids' doctor's appointments instead of the parent, the actual parent. There's no way to get your ex, your new boyfriend or girlfriend drawn into court than if you start playing mommy or daddy.
Right. And even if your intentions are great.
And they usually are great.
I had a client who was out there dating and her ex-husband had remarried somebody and it was prom time for the daughter. And the stepmom said to the daughter, let's go prom dress shopping.
Oh God.
Yeah, no, not the way to get along. Maybe what you can do if you're the new person dealing with an ex, even if you do get along, just say, hey, I realize you're super busy. If there's anything I can do to help with the prom extravaganza, you can count on me.
You know what else you can
say?
Let's say you don't have a daughter and let's say you get along kind of well with the ex. You might even be able to say, again, this really is case by case, but you might say, I don't want to step on your toes, but I would love to come when you pick out the prom dress. And I promise to be really quiet and to give you $300 or $500 towards the outfit. I don't know, like something like that. If you really want to go or for the wedding dress, like there's ways to do it so that you are deferring to the other person's position. You're not playing mom. You're just being like the friend. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I, as the mother of three sons, you know, I hope somebody lets me pick out a dress if my boys marry girls who wear dresses.
Exactly. That's really lovely. I know a good friend of mine is a columnist in Chicago, Heidi Stevens, and she writes the most beautiful article. She's divorced and from her ex-husband, both are now remarried. And she wrote about how his ex-wife, even though she and her ex didn't get along and clearly they're divorced, but how the new wife and her have mended this relationship such that they're all better than ever.
Yeah.
And Heidi said, I'm the mom on Halloween because I'm a working mom that's pulled in 100 directions. I'm a journalist. I'll buy the costumes, right, at Walmart for Halloween. But her ex's new wife didn't have any kids and was very crafty. And so she messaged Heidi and said, would it be okay,
exactly,
you know, if I sewed the kids' Halloween costumes?
Right.
And Heidi was like, okay, it would be amazing. And it was a win-win-win because
exactly,
there was an offer. This new stepmom was so respectful, knew how to stay in her lane, what she was good at, where Heidi could use some help, asked permission. Heidi was a big enough person to go, I want what's best for my kids.
Exactly.
Yes, thank you so much. And wrote a column about this. And it was
exactly,
so resonant to people in Chicago that read this. It's like, oh my gosh, she can be part of the solution. And Heidi was like, I had to put my own ego in check and say, oh my gosh, this woman is not trying to step on my toes. Why wouldn't I let someone else love my kids?
Right. And I mean, not everybody can do that. And not everybody has an ex who is married to somebody who sounds as wonderful as Heidi's exes.
Exactly.
But I mean, oh my gosh, what a wonderful story. I love that. And that's sort of where I was going with the prom dress, the wedding dress. Just ask, be respectful, stay in your lane. And all you can do is your best. Not everybody's going to take your bid. but you can try.
Yeah, absolutely. And back to the conflict thing, guys, here's what I want to tell you. This is how I coach my clients at SDA. We're like, look at conflict as, imagine you're a rock climber. And every time you're trying to climb this summit, and every time you're at point A, you know you've got to get up to point B, right? And good, well-handled conflict is like getting to the next point on the mountain or the summit. If you navigate the treacherous path well, you're going to take that relationship to a better place. I have sister-in-laws. I have a brother. I have parents. We all live within 2 miles of each other. We had a family business. I've been married for 25 years with 2 teenagers. And having these rules of engagement, number one, and this rubric around conflict has turned our family into something so positive. In fact, my sister-in-law and I talk, and she said, where did you learn this? Like, how did your parents teach you this? I said, my parents didn't teach us this.
We learned it by fire.
We learned it by fire. My brother and I were both in a family business, and we realized, okay, we've got to keep our employees, our clients, and our family together in this canoe. So you become adept at a young age of saying conflict is inevitable in any honest relationship. I'm going to say that again for the people in the back.
By the way, say that again.
Conflict is inevitable for any relationship that is authentic. If there are 2 people that are living in a space together, working on a project together, have a goal together, whatever it is, and if there's no conflict, somebody is giving in.
That's right. And that is a big problem. By the way, acquiescence without being honest is a really big problem. Again, I know I sound like this hippie guru person, but forgive yourself if you're a yes person, but stop it, because then you wind up being known as passive aggressive. You say yes, you mean no, but you haven't given yourself that pause to really figure out what you want. I've had this happen so many times in divorce mediations before I would spell out the rules to my clients. Somebody would give in and it would go so quickly. But then we realized, no. I don't want anybody to say what they want, what they're okay with, until they've had a time to take a step back, to think about it, to really marinate on it. Honesty with yourself is absolutely essential for the conflict to go well.
That couldn't be more true, right? And in a sense, you have to be self-aware and put the mirror back to yourself.
Right. And that's really hard for people. I mean, I feel like, Bella, you and I really, we got the saying no down pretty well, but a lot of people don't. And it's a real skill.
Yeah. So, and there's a way to say no in a way that doesn't hurt people's feelings,
right,
but also respects where you are, right? I would love to do that. However, I am so strapped for time. I love what you're doing. Maybe I can support in this other way, right? If somebody asks you to be on a committee you don't want to be on, instead of saying yes begrudgingly and then being mad at the person, turn that mirror around to your point. You're the one that said yes.
Right. But like some people don't know their minds enough to say no in the moment. So I'm saying, take a beat, say, let me get back to you. Give me till Friday. I'm not sure what I think. There's a whole script that you can develop and just pick some little catchphrases out for yourself so that you have words to use to buy yourself time, and then actually go back. And if the answer is no, say no. The world will not crumble if you say no. You will be resentful if you say yes.
Exactly. I had a client, and this is a funny story, who, you know, is very cordial and polite, and was talking to a new friend of hers that was sick, right? Let's say this friend had, you know, stage 1 breast cancer, like something terrible, but they weren't really great friends. But my client said to her, is there anything I can do for you? Like, send a dinner, like, let me know. And this new friend said, well, sure, if you'd like to send us dinner tonight, that'd be great. And now my client was vexed at this. She was annoyed. And when I had this conversation, I'm like, well, okay, why are you, she's like, can I just talk to you about this situation? Like, I just need to vent. I said, absolutely. And so she's like, I offered this. And I mean, it was just being socially graceful, like, and, but I barely know this person, but she took me up on it. I said, well, you've got to own your part in saying, if you offered, most people would say, no, 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 we're really good. Thank you. But there are those people that will be like, well, if you're offering, right. Who am I to say no, right? We all know those people. And so this person—
They're called the New Yorkers.
And they'll say, sure, send me dinner. I'll send you exactly what I want. And so my client was a little vexed at this. I'm like, okay, this is a learning moment for you. From an integrity standpoint, I'm like, what is going to make you feel good? Well, I'm going to send the dinner, even though it's going to cost me $100. And I think it's so stupid because we don't even know each other. I'm like, okay, but you're going to live in integrity. So she sent the dinner. I'm like, be proud of yourself for being a person of integrity. Okay. And it's okay to feel your feelings, but in the future, be mindful of saying yes or offering things that you don't really want. Ask yourself, do I really want to say, let me know if there's anything you need, like a dinner? And if somebody takes you up on that, the only person you can blame at that moment is yourself.
There was a woman who I knew for some time. And when I was having one of my children, she said, she wrote me a card and she said, and she makes this particular cake that I love. And she said, any day, anytime that you want this cake, I will make it for you. That is your present.
Aw.
So I called her for the cake. And the first time I called, it wasn't a good date. And then I called again for the cake. I wasn't letting it go. I'm the crazy person. I am from Brooklyn and Staten Island. So I'm just taking a pass on there. You know,
Gabrielle's like, Illinois. Oh, wait, that's me.
Illinois. Well, right. Exactly. So wait. So three times I asked, three times she didn't deliver the cake. So she's dead to me.
Wow. Right.
Because why would you offer a cake if you're not going to make it? But then What happened was years later, I was having a big birthday and my husband cooks really well. And he said, what would you like for dinner? And I included the name of this person's cake. And we haven't seen this person in a really long time. And he said,
well, obviously, because she's dead to you.
Exactly. Like I'd see her at social events. I would, you know, she would make cordial conversation, but like, anyway, so, and I'm sure she thought I was like crazy calling her for the cake. So anyway, so it's my birthday and it's years and years have gone by. And my husband says, I was going to make you whatever kind of cake. I said, no, I want this cake. Now you all know how crazy I am.
So you called her a fourth time?
So he tracked down the recipe and she made him promise never to share it with anybody. But I have the recipe and he made me the cake and he makes it all the time and it's fabulous.
Oh my God. What kind of cake is it?
I feel like I can't say in case she listens to the podcast. It's just chocolate cake.
It's chocolate cake.
But it is the best chocolate cake and we cannot share the recipe, but low key.
You can.
I'm not answering.
But low key. So Gabrielle's offering to all of you that you need a chocolate cake. That's me. And I want you all to take her up on it and message her multiple times for the cake. I'm totally kidding.
I know.
But this is so funny how these little things that we can do and we do these, you know, and because some of us, especially women, we're programmed to be nice even though we don't want to do it. She didn't want to make the cake.
You didn't want to make the cake. We're not friends. Fine. We're not friends. I felt like writing her a note saying like, we're not friends, but I just got the recipe and we're good. Now I like her again. I have the recipe. We're good. That's better than the cake. It's the gift that keeps on giving. That's how I get along.
Absolutely. Stalk and get the recipe. That's Gabrielle's next book. Stalk the chocolate cake. So I think
Look, I'm obviously not a person who runs from conflict, but I generally get along with people. And I would say, you know, once we're friends, that's it. You know, once you enter that vortex, there's no leaving. Unless you don't bake for me.
Unless you promise me something and you don't deliver. In that case, you're dead to me. But, and I think that this is really important, because if you find yourself to be that person, I have definitely been that person to be like, oh my God, call me if you need anything, right? Even though I've got 17 bajillion things going on. And now after helping that client through that situation, it has made me turn the mirror to myself and say, only offer things that I will do, because I learn through coaching my clients situations. It's like, yeah, wow, that could happen to anybody. So
I need to be more polite. I actually lost a friend. Maybe you have to cut this out.
We're not cutting anything. We're not cutting anything.
I had a friend who I really adored, and we are still friends, but she had a big life event and I knew I couldn't be there. And I was a little bit too direct. And I was like, in the moment, I was like, I know I can't come. And she was like, and she's Southern. And she's like, wow, you didn't even pretend. And I was like, well, I know I can't. So I've had to learn to be a little less direct, to your point.
Yeah. And saying things,
take a beat. Love.
Take a beat and know how would, and this is another thing we teach a lot at Smart Dating Academy, because we're going on dates, right? It's right. Like, how would you feel if you received the message that you just gave?
Exactly. And
that's the definition of empathy.
Right. I do the same thing with the private divorce solution. It's like, okay, this is what you want. What if we flip it around and they get what you're asking for? Does that feel good? Or does something about that feel not quite right?
Right. And it's delivering a message to someone in a way that you would feel okay about receiving, and take a beat before you, because in today's world, God love therapy, God love boundaries, okay? But we're so quick at this point to be like, you violated a boundary. I can't do that. That's over time. And again, assume positive intent. Nobody's trying to violate your boundaries. They don't know your invisible boundaries. Right. Only you know where your spray painted bright white lines are. I can't see your invisible bright white lines. So come from a place of love and say, that person doesn't know that I don't take calls after 6 p.m. Right. That person doesn't know whatever it is that I really want to come to her party, but I'm not able to, right? So it's being kind in your communications to people, I think, is such an underrated skill. And as we move forward in the workplace, right, and as we want to get promoted, as we want to build new friendships, new relationships, understanding how to say yes in the right way and understand how to say no in a way that doesn't turn people off is going to be so crucial to our growth.
And we have to keep growing. We have to keep learning, and we have to be open to continuing to learn.
Oh, I'm so with you. Well, are there any other things that you want to tell us about, your secrets to getting along, making it easier? Any last gems you want to drop on us?
So I would just say that if anyone has any questions, particularly if you pre-order a copy of The Secret to Getting Along, and I'll give Bella all the information, between now and May 15th, and then you go onto the website, which Bella will include in the show notes at GabrielleHartley.com. I'm going to be hosting a live webinar where you can submit questions and I will be answering them live for you. And if you're going through a separation or a divorce, or if you're getting married and you're looking for prenup mediation, just go to GabrielleHartley.com and hit the contact or give me a call and let's talk.
Well, Gabrielle, thank you so much for being on. Congratulations on your future best-selling book that has been called a must-read, you guys, by Malcolm Gladwell, Daniel Pink, Adam Grant, and Susan Cains. I mean, like, wow, that's amazing, Gabrielle. So I can't wait to read your book, and I'm sure smart daters will all want to read your book as well. And we'll put a link to it in the show notes. So as Gabrielle said, you can pre-order it and join her free webinar. And for those of you that this resonated with, and you feel like, gosh, I could use some help in my messaging. Maybe that's text messaging in the apps with your emails, how you're comporting yourself on dates. If you're not getting the second, third, and fourth dates and you're scratching your head, maybe it's time for a consultation. Maybe you should go to smartdatingacademy.com and fill out a form where we can actually help you to get along with your dates in a better way. So you're getting the second, third, fourth, and fifth date with the people you want. So Gabrielle, again, thank you so much for being here. Your gift to the world. And smart daters, until next week, find someone that you can get along with in a better way and let us know how you do that. DM us, put it in the comments on Instagram this week. We'll be reading them all. Until next week, we'll see you then. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.